Want to talk about a new movie?
Check.
Want to talk about an older movie similar or related to that new movie?
Check.
That's what you can expect from Quality Check Podcast.
It's a new podcast on the Studio DNA Network, hosted by yours truly, Drew Douglas and
Daniel Posey. Every other Tuesday, we'll talk about a new movie and an old movie to see how the film's quality holds up.
What? Murphy? What do you want? You can have my Pepsi.
Please tell me that dog drinks Pepsi.
I'm not a very good disciplinarian, so he could probably have whatever he wants this morning.
Hi, Shonda. I'm Corey.
Hi, Corey.
How are you?
I'm so good, and I even have hot coffee in case the Pepsi doesn't wake me up. I know, it's worse for you.
Well, I'm going to ask you this, because I've been where you're sitting, not physically.
On
but
my couch?
Not your couch. If you're drinking that Pepsi and nature calls...
Well, honey, we have a contest in this house. Are we on right now, this minute, or...
I'm going to hit record. You do not have to worry about how you look. I just like the audio of Zoom so much better than a phone.
Well, I sure would have loved to known that when I'm racing to the shower.
Sorry.
I'd have still been in my pajamas if I'd known that. Obviously, I'm not a morning person.
Welcome to the podcast. My guest is the queen of clean, comedian Shonda Pierce.
What else? With Corey Mann from the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Hit the follow or subscribe button so you never miss an episode on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play. Feel free to leave some feedback, write a review, or tell a friend about What Else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network.
If you and I weren't doing this, what time do you roll out of bed?
About 11. I don't go to bed till 2.
On purpose?
I kind of try to keep the same hours at home that I have on the road. And that's about how, you know, you get off the stage. I probably get to the bus about 10, try to shower and wind down a little bit. We'll watch something on television, you know, if we're streaming something. And then I kind of go to bed about 2. Takes a while to nod off because the bus is bouncy, you know. And so then I'll get up about 11. My girlfriends, who all have 9-to-5 jobs, here it comes. Wasn't it good? I told you I could do it.
We're blessed. We are blessed.
I have absolutely no class. You know, no wonder I get no dates on my online dating.
Wait a minute. Are you seriously doing that?
I tried. I'd almost done all, I haven't ever done Tinder. I have, I think, a month left on our time, but most of those people look half dead.
Do you put, like, Shonda, comedian? I mean, do you do the whole thing?
Well, you know, you don't put your name. They don't let you put your name, but you just come up with something. But I always just go, if maybe you might recognize my face, so yes, it's me. Because, if you try to be clandestine, it would almost look like I'm a little tawdry. So you just have to own up to who you are. It just looks quite desperate. When you do have a little bit of a notoriety and you still can't get a date, it's quite sad. I think maybe that is what, my girlfriends go, you know, guys are intimidated by successful women, blah, blah, blah. And I go, no, maybe I'm just old, fat, and ugly. Have you ever thought of that?
I would have to be very secure in my own fill in the blank because I would figure... Yeah. Shonda's going to end up using me as material.
Absolutely. It worked for my husband. I don't know what's wrong with you other men. But my joke is always on stage is always that when I first started online dating, I thought, this is going to be really great. This would be kind of fun. And then I thought, no, this is going to be really good material. And then after a little while, I was like, no, this is really sad. I'm going to be in therapy for years.
Do you mind if I ask you a bunch of questions that you've probably been asked 1,000 times?
I would love it. And I come up with a different answer every time. So no one really knows me.
Origin story. Is Kentucky where it all starts?
Well, yeah, from the womb. But I don't think we were there very long. I was born in Covington, Kentucky. My father, I think at that time, was a minister of music. And then soon after went into the pastorate. And so, you know, you move around a little bit. There were four of us. Here's what's interesting about preacher's kids. My brother, who is 10 years older than I am, he was born in Indiana. My big sister was born in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, because my dad was in the Army for a little bit. And then I was born in Covington, Kentucky. And then my little sister was born in Indiana again. So we obviously traversed that area for quite some time. But then finally, at about age 7, I moved to, or maybe it was before that, 6. I think I was 6, first grade. I moved to South Carolina and stayed in South Carolina until I was 15, and then moved to Middle Tennessee. Oddly enough, here in Tennessee, there was a great big theme park that was very popular called Opryland USA. I think about the age 19 or 20, I went to try to get a job there, and I didn't make it into the auditions because they said I was too skinny.
Really?
No one's ever said that since. And then a couple of years later, you know, I got a couple of years of college under my belt and a lot of classes. I was a theater arts major. So, and then when I auditioned, then I got the job. And then, so I sang and danced at a theme park for 6 years, but I was terrible at dancing because my dad by then was a Nazarene pastor. And, you know, you go to hell in a handbasket if you dance. And so I got the part of impersonating Cousin Minnie Pearl. And I fell in love with comedy. I just loved watching people laugh, you know. And when I started out doing what I do, I did 15 minutes of Minnie Pearl, wore the hat and everything. And my testimony was basically this overwhelming surprise that God found me a job where I had to make people laugh, you know, 6 days a week, 5 times a day. And life wasn't very funny for me at that time. And I was going through a lot of grief, a lot of hard stuff to understand. I'd been raised in somewhat of a legalistic environment, and yet my parents divorced. And that was very disillusioning at that time. And my sisters had both died. And so by the time I was 18, I lost both my sisters. And so by the time I got to Opryland, I was newly married, trying to find my place in the world. And all the things that identified you, you know, all the markers in your childhood were all gone. And so it was a new day for me. And I just found it fascinating that I fell in love with laughter. Well, after finding out about comedy and studying comics, we're all messed up. So so I feel right at home in my craft.
I remember vacationing and my parents took me to Opryland. And I remember seeing the little acts, you know, people would they'd have a barbershop quartet over here. And now, did you know who Minnie Pearl was and Hee Haw and all that? Yes. Did you have?
Well, as a kid, I wasn't allowed to watch Hee Haw. We weren't allowed to watch much television. So I wasn't real familiar with her. But my boss, Joe Gerrels, he was such a great director. And I was in a show called Country Music USA. And it gave the history of country music by impersonating all the country music people. And I did Barbara Mandrell, Dolly Parton. Had to use socks, if you know what I mean. Kitty Wales, It Was a God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels. So, you know, stuff like that. But I was really struggling in the dance area. You had to learn different dances. You know, you had different choral group things that the whole cast had to do. But then there was some really hard, like, square dancing stuff. And I was clogging. And he gave me the sheet of paper. He said, go home and work on these and watch Minnie Pearl. And let's see if you can do this. And I fell in love with that. And I guess I did a good job because eventually I did. She came out to the park and watched the show. And then I got to meet her. And I started doing performances as Minnie Pearl, you know, for the Chamber of Commerce and for her when she couldn't, you know, show up. As she got older, there were a couple of girls that would, you know, impersonate her for the city of Nashville or for the Grand Ole Opry and say, oh, y'all come see us in Nashville, you know. And I love that. I love meeting her and picking her brain. I didn't know at the time that this is what I was wind up doing. I wish I'd paid more attention, you know. And I try to tell young people that you run across people and you go, yeah, but you just soak it in because you don't know where that's going to come back and lead you down the path. But I'll never forget one corporate show we were doing at the Grand Ole Opry. And as she got older, I would skip out and go, howdy, and do a few minutes of, you know, of her. And she would skip behind me and say, who are you? And then the crowd would go crazy because there's the real one, you know. And we did that so she didn't have to work so much time, you know. And so, but anyway, we were backstage and she asked me one night if I liked what I was doing. And I said, yes, ma'am, I kind of really like this comedy thing. And she said, you've got a really great sense of timing, but you're really going to never understand the medicine of laughter until you make peace with God. And I was like, I bet my mother told you to say that. She hit the nail on the head. I was just, you know, I was just this bitter and sarcastic. I was as sarcastic as can be. I still have to struggle with, I struggle with that a little bit because I'm around church people all the time, you know, but it was a great, went to her house, visited her in her home. And one of the sweetest parts of the beginnings of my career is she invited me to come and share my testimony to her women's group at her church in a big church in Brentwood, Tennessee. And that was felt like a real shot in the arm that she would trust me. You know, I have artist friends I would never invite to my church. I look back at that and go, wow, that was a real honor, you know, that she would trust me with her own folks. But when she passed, I would wear the hat. I would not wear the dress. No one will ever really be Minnie Pearl. There's still a couple of girls that for the Opry, just as a, you know, for picture sake, you know, you can, you know, have pictures made with lookalikes all the time. But it was a wonderful training ground. And how wonderful that God's providence. I was so sarcastic and so floating in and out of what I thought relationship with Jesus was like, that he allowed me to cross paths with a very clean comedian. And so that was the first influence to comedy for me. It was a long time after when I started listening to comics that I went, some of them are really nasty.
I had a conversation with, name drop, Stephen Curtis Chapman about 2 months ago. His first job was at Opryland. Did you guys cross paths?
Absolutely. I used to tease all the time going, I've seen Steve the Curse Chapman in his dance belt. He was the only one that would wear. So, you know, it's public theater, and this is how public life is. You have to change clothes in about 2 seconds sometimes. I mean, everything's Velcro and all that. So you're all in one big room. You don't have time to really look at each other. But I can remember this. You probably kill me for saying it. He and a couple of other guys that were Christians and married, you know, and wanted to get into songwriting, they would wear like layers under their dance belt. So it looked really stupid, but they were trying to be so modest, you know, and wound up looking doofus, you know, but he was great. You know, we were all so green and new and excited about finding a job where it was a nice, clean place to work and you could perfect your craft. And I can remember him playing the guitar and singing backstage and just goofing off when we weren't, you know, doing shows. And I don't, you know, you would visit each other's shows. I think he did country music show once, but I think he was in a show called Way Out West or something. It was really good. But his brother, Herb, was awesome. I mean, great voice and all that. But you talk about a dancer and, you know, the Cowboys, they did all these flips off the stage and stuff. He was great. And I just remember, you know, the Chapman brothers, that they were, you know, they were in a show together. So it was really fun. And I met him early on. And it was funny because a handful of married Christian folks, we all hung out together. A man named Jerry Sally, who's now a great bluegrass writer and singer and superstar in his own right as far as country music writer. But a lot of us who were born again Christians and all married, and everybody was very young, you know, and very new. And there was few of us that were married. So at the end of the day, you know, a lot of people go party or let's go have a drink or something. We all had to go home. You know, we had family and children and kids. And so we all kind of hung together. And that was a very memorable time. Very memorable.
Who were some of those comics that you tried out at the beginning? And you're like, all right, let me listen to what's going on over here.
When I was a teenager, you know, in South Carolina, I would sit on the floor and listen to every Bill Cosby LP. I had all of them. I loved it. What a great storyteller. You know, and isn't it sad that his legacy now will never be remembered, you know, as a great storyteller, as a great comic, and, you know, a great producer. And that's a shame. But yeah, those were great, great stories, great times. And I loved those. I had a Grady Nutt LP. Nobody hardly remembers Grady Nutt. The Gospel Music Association has an award called the Grady Nutt Humor Award, and I've gotten it many times, and Mark Lauer's gotten it many times. Just like, but I remember sitting at a breakfast table when they were giving out that award during Gospel Music Week, and I leaned over and I said, this is such an honor. Thank you. So a lot of people on the board who were presenting me the award And one of the girls go, who is Grady Nutt? You're giving out an award. You don't even know who the guy is. But, you know, people like that I was always drawn to in my childhood, you know, looking back, the funny evangelists that always come to town and have the funniest stories, you know. And so that's kind of how I began. But I really, when I gave my life to Jesus, I was in an office on Music Row. I had left the park. I was still working for Miss Minnie from time to time, but I did not have any interest. I didn't even know there was Christian comedy. And I heard a song that so penetrated my heart that the Holy Spirit used. And at that time, I was trying my hand at song plugging, where you go to the artist and you go, this is a great song for you, and you find out what they're recording. And our office did mostly country music. But anyway, it's called The Saving Kind. And eventually, the Gold City Quartet recorded it. Brian Free sang it. It's gorgeous. And of course, I used to sing it. And I would go, this is the song that I heard. And it's about, you know, the love you're looking for. And it's so true. I was so thirsty for something deeper. It reminded me of everything I was running from, you know, and reminded me what to run to. I went in the bathroom, got saved again. I mean, I got saved a lot growing up, but I got saved again, and it really stuck. I went in and told my boss, I need to leave. I was so nauseous. I was so convicted. I knew I was so far from where I wanted to be in relationship and what I needed to be. And I picked my daughter up at daycare. She was four. And I told my boss, I need to slip out. And she says, when are you coming back? Murphy, I'm doing some important work here. You're squeaking your doggy.
This part of the podcast is brought to you by PetSmart. Back to you.
Exactly. But I went in. I actually went in and told my boss, I need to go home and talk to my husband. She goes, when are you coming back? And I said, I don't think I'm ever coming back. And I left that environment. I just knew if to get truly serious and grow in my relationship with the Lord, I couldn't be around an environment that was a constant battle and a constant fight, because I was weak. I was a weak, weak Christian. So I went home, told my husband, I gave my life to Jesus in the bathroom today, and I quit my job. And he goes, did Jesus tell you to do that? I said, we really got to get in church. Our kid doesn't know anything about, you know, Sunday school. And I look back at the hand of God. You know, my pastor was like, can you do our Valentine's banquet? We don't have anybody, you know, and you're free. Do your mini pearl thing, you know. And I said, oh, I'd be glad to. And it's a little tiny, tiny church. And he goes, but be sure and give a word of testimony. And so for my own little local church in Smyrna, Tennessee, was really the first time I ever formulated this idea of, I'm going to do some mini pearl stuff, then I'm going to take my hat off, and then I'm going to tell some funny stories of my childhood, and then I'm going to tell people how the Lord, you know, saved me out of the depths of degradation. And it worked. My pastor recommended me to somebody else, and then before long, some huge, giant leader in our denomination heard about it, and he invited me to speak before the whole denomination met up in Indianapolis, 60,000 Nazarenes. And from there, my phone never stopped ringing. And then eventually I met Mark Lowry, which I didn't know there were Christian comics, and I'm still not so sure about him.
I just blew through an HBO series about comedy. I kept watching this guy wanting to work his material. So he'd go to all these New York clubs during the weeknights and just trying to get 7 minutes here and 10 minutes there and trying to formulate this act. Did you have a place where you could go and work the craft, or was it while you were doing your regular performances, you'd sneak stuff in and go, does this work? Does this not work? How did that work for you?
About 12 years ago, I got this hotshot Hollywood manager is what I call him because he's so funny. A man called me and said, you know, I've heard of who you are. I've watched your stuff on television. And it's funny because he really ran across a book about laughing in the dark, which was a book about depression. And his wife had just started becoming quite depressed. She had just entered menopause and all that stuff. He said, you know, his firm managed Billy Crystal and Robin Williams and, I mean, a whole list of people. They were discovered David Letterman and all that stuff. And I was like, I asked my pastor, you think it's all right for me to go? And he goes, absolutely. We've got a building program starting, you know, get out there and make some money. And I met him and I fell in love with his family and he began to manage me. And he used to always say, Shonda, you have no idea. And you're right. Comics will go out and work 8 minutes for hours and hours, night after night, just to perfect 8 minutes. I said, I haven't talked for just 8 minutes since I was four. It is so, that is one of the sweetest I start saying gifts, but let's don't get too carried away. My favorite quote in the world is Lucille Ball, who said, "I am not funny, but I am brave." And that is what comedy is in a nutshell, is being brave enough to trust yourself, you know, and to be okay when it bombs, you know, that you don't have to pick yourself up off the shameful floor. I never went to comedy clubs. I was probably doing comedy for 15 years before I ever stepped foot in a comedy club. I had a husband who struggled, whose childhood was filled with alcohol. And so we steered clear of it up until about the last 5 years of his life. He didn't touch it. And that's what's so sad, you know, about his life. But And that's a whole nother story. But we just, you know, and growing up in that environment, we didn't go to movies growing up. We didn't, you know, I snuck off to the prom. You know, it's that kind of stuff. I look back and I go, well, I thank the Lord for that, because I'm not a very disciplined person as I'm sitting here in the morning drinking Diet Pepsi. So can you imagine trying to live a godly life in an environment where there is temptation of all kinds everywhere? I think God just saved me, you know, and just kept me from being in places where, you know, he'll say, you will never get tempted with what you, he will give you a way out. And the way out for me was, he never told me about the door. He never told me where the door was. And so I was so grateful that all that came to me at a much more mature time spiritually, so that when I did go into a comedy club, I was ready. It didn't bother me, but I hated it. I just hated it. You know, and this has nothing to do, you know, I'm not bad mouthing anybody. Comedy is such a hard thing. Anybody that does it is brave. But I wanted something more than just the laugh. Just the laugh is great and it's good medicine and God will use it. But I wanted to leave a crowd with more. I wanted to be able to wrap up the night and go, there's a God who loves you. You know, I found that my life with Christ is meaningful, and I want to pray with you before we go. You can't do that in a comedy club. They're already on their third or fourth beverage. And so I just wanted more. I wanted my pain to mean something. And I wanted people to learn from my mistakes and to know that you don't have to run from God, that he's waiting with open arms to embrace you. And what's so precious, that little hotshot Hollywood manager who, you know, most everybody in Hollywood's Jewish that's in the comedy world, and he's a Jewish fella. I took him to Israel one time with me. You know, he just loved it. He went to all, you know, I always tell him, we're going to my half of the Bible today. You know, his name is Andrew Tenenbaum, and he is still my manager. He's also now managing Tim Hawkins. He's falling in love with we Christian girls and boys.
Who is your Shauna That's Not Funny? Do you have someone like that?
Well, my son, but I don't listen to him. Andrew Tenenbaum a lot. He used to caution me when I was asked to come to the White House, and then I was asked to be funny at the inauguration at one of the balls. You know, he used to caution me, you know, because he was out in Beverly Hills, California, to not get too close to the Trump world. You know, it's going to come back and bite you. And it did, but I don't regret it. But now he is also, it's funny, he always says, I'm the only conservative Republican in Beverly Hills. But I don't think that's true. He's meeting more and more people like that. My son is a great person to bounce things off. Now, he is a comedy connoisseur. That kid, if he ever decided to stand up, he'd be a superstar. He just wouldn't be very clean. And he's 32. So, mama's done all I can do to influence his life. But he's a great man. My son is a great man. But he's a real comedy connoisseur. And we discuss that all the time. What I think is hilarious, sometimes he doesn't think. But I know my demographic because I am one. So, you know, jokes about menopause and all that, he just rolls his eyes like, that's so gross, you know. But there's other, Seinfeld, he thinks is brilliant. Seinfeld was a clean comic. There are comics that made it huge. And the really biggest ones, they're clean on television. The hard part about Hollywood, they want to come and find you in these comedy clubs, and they'll take the filthiest comic, clean them up, and put them on primetime TV. In point, and God rest his soul, he seemed like a really sweet man. And I did meet him, Bob Saget. Bob Saget, who was on Full House, that really sweet, family-friendly show. But at night in the comedy club, he was absolutely filthy. I mean, one of the filthiest comics I've ever heard in my life. And it's so weird. And that's what Hollywood would do. And it frustrated Andrew so much when he would try to set up opportunity for me to be seen. And he said, they don't even have to clean you up. You're ready for a sitcom. You're ready for primetime. But he couldn't get a bite on that hook to save his life. One day he sat on the bus and he goes, I think I'm experiencing Christian persecution. And I said, wow. I said, well, first of all, you're not. We're sitting on a really nice bus. You know, this is not Christian persecution. If I don't make it to the Tonight Show, I'm going to be fine. There are Christians that are hung upside down right now, you know. So, you know, and he just chuckled and he goes, yeah, you're right. But he was very surprised. He said, the internet killed me. There was so much out there about me and my Christian life and my faith and my testimony. He had several shows that he was trying to pitch me for that I always said, she just talks so much about Jesus Christ. But I don't regret it. 27 years I've been doing this, and I don't regret one thing about, you know, being so bold in my faith. I don't regret it at all. And, you know, forgive me, Corey. I'm so bad at this. This is what I don't do well. I know my answers are way too long. You're going to have to edit them, I'm sure.
Actually, I'd like to watch you just do your hair for a brief moment. Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't know you could see me. I've been going like this and talking to you.
Oh, yeah, and the dog has been the best part. That's
oh,
the part.
Oh, that's right. You saw the dog.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad I didn't pick my nose or something.
Have you done everything you wanted to do, or is there that one thing like, I do want a sitcom, I do want a fill-in-the-blank?
You know, I used to want a sitcom so bad. At six, I'll be 62 next week. I don't want to work that hard. The one thing, you know, I've always wanted to be in a movie. And so I've been in like four or five Hallmark movies and a couple of faith-based movies. And then my last thing my husband and I worked on was a movie called Holy Karaoke that we wrote. My husband was my writer. He was just fantastic. And so we finally got it out and got it worked on. Chris Dowling directed it, had to rewrite it so we could possibly film it with no budget. And it's a great movie. I mean, it was a really good budget for Christian music. I mean, I shouldn't bash it or they'll never release it. And we've been waiting for it since COVID. We've been waiting to release it. But in June, it comes out. It's called Roll With It.
Where do I see it at?
In your movie theaters. Roll With It comes out in June. And the best part of the whole movie is one of the karaoke scenes. Michael W. Smith sings Freebird dressed like Billy Ray Cyrus. That is worth the price of the ticket alone. But I love that. I love doing movies. I'd like to do more of that, even though it is really hard work, really hard work. But my number one thing I haven't done, I don't know at this stage in my life I'll get the opportunity, and I'm fine with that, but I'd love to host my own show, like a Ellen DeGeneres type show. I would absolutely love that. I'm not sure that I would want to do it every day. And I'd like to just really talk and get to the nitty-gritty of some things and some people and books and ideas. And I would really, really love that. I think I've learned some things in life that would be helpful to the moms that are sitting at home, you know, at that 11 o'clock hour. And so I would love that. National television probably will never let me do it because I will talk about my conservative faith and my love for Jesus. And I want to do that. And then I think TBN is a little scared of me, frankly. I think they are. Because it's been pitched over there so many times by so many different people, and they never bite. So
that's truly, you know, surprising with the amount of outlets that you and I have access to literally right now that somebody would be able to go, yeah, let's give her a weekly thing. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, wouldn't it be wonderful? Keep saying that. Maybe I need an agent, you know. I think in the Nashville area, I would love to even just start on a noon show here in Nashville on local television. But I really would rather do something where I can talk about my faith and we can close out the day with prayer and, you know, all of that. Daystar Network is an amazing network. I've never really approached them, but they're very good friends. And we lost Mr. Lamb, Marcus Lamb. He passed away. And Joni, his wife, is really good friends of mine. I've toyed with it. I did a show called Aspiring Women in a Chicago-based network and even got a Daytime Emmy nomination. So that was kind of cool from a thing I hosted about dogs. It was so cute. You know, I love that. But it was a cast of women. It was several women on it. But I would really enjoy that, I think. I would like to tour less. But because it's hard, you know, at this age. But there is nothing that beats a live audience. It is just so great. So I don't know. That's a real dream of mine. You know, it really is. And Mr. T, that's what I call Mr. Tenenbaum. We discuss it all the time of where to land on that. And he, you know, don't really get an interest. I am probably too edgy for most of Christian television. And I know that. And I could have reined it in, but saying butt crack is still the funniest word I've ever known, you know. So, you know, I've shot myself in the foot in some ways. I'm not one of those that, you know, ends the show with everybody coming forward and getting saved. Although sometimes I have. I've just felt like that's the way to do it. So I'm just in that middle, you know, that I'm entertaining enough that women, I'm blessed. Maybe I'll start women's conferences or something because I relate. I get them. They get me. We've all grown up together. But at this place in my life, yeah, that's the one thing I have. There's a long answer. You'll have to edit this up. But yeah, that's the one thing I haven't done that I'd really, really like a shot at. And I think I could do it. I really think I'd be good at it. There's enough television stations around in Nashville or studios, you know, where I could film it here. I don't want to move. My name is in the hat to go to The View. I've been on The View several times, but now they're looking for conservative, you know, people to be on The View. No, thank you. I'd have to kill somebody in Jesus' name.
Oh, boy.
You know, I did the route. I've been on the Sirius satellite radio where you go up there and, you know, go from one room to the other when they used to have it like that and you do interviews. And I did a lot of interviews on not Christian shows. And I love that because they're always surprised that you're really funny, you know, and you didn't bash them over the head with a Bible. Then I leave and think, I'm going to bash him over the head when he steps out of here with the Bible. But yeah, I'd love that. I'd like to work with Jeff Foxworthy sometime. That's the one comic I have. I know him and he knows me, but I've never worked with him. I'd like to work with him or Larry the Cable Guy. I'd like to open for Reba, even though there's no money in it. I would still like to do it. You know, there's little things. While I was building a career, there's little things I missed. I wasn't an opening act. You know, I've never been I went straight from working on a comic belief with Mark Lowry straight to being a headliner. And I'm still blessed, man. I just came off of 4 shows sold out, people screaming and laughing. And we had a wonderful time. People my age doesn't do that anymore. Yeah, and every show I tell people, thank you so much for coming. Cause you couldn't fit this many people in a comedy club. So God has blessed me. The Bible says, stand up for me and I'll stand up for you.
Have you ever done animated anything?
Cartoon. Actually, wouldn't you like to end your life with being a cartoon?
Hey.
Come on. No, I did a reel long, 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 long time ago for William Morris Agency. And they were going to pitch it, you know, back when I was with William Morris. And they never did, really. And then I was with a huge agency for 15 years, CAA. I love those folks. Jeff Gregg was my agent. And I went to those big agencies on purpose because I felt like, you know, and Andrew was really the wise one. We felt like we had a good, strong foundation in the Christian market. Now let's go somewhere where they can take your numbers and what you've done well and what you do well and broaden it. And it would never happen. And I can only say it must be the providence of God, you know, for some reason. And then also at the same time, about every other time I had a great chance to do something like that, something would happen. My mother would pass. My husband passed. You know, I have difficult with one of my kids. And so it, you know, it's just, I just think it, where sometimes people are moaning and groaning because the opportunity they didn't get. I look at that and go, maybe it's the hand of God protecting me from something.
Is it hard to be Shonda Pierce?
Not in my little town in Ashland City. I went to high school here. It's where I met my husband here. I moved back to this little town on purpose because nobody cares. I can go to Walmart in my pajamas and look like everybody else. You know, it is, and I love that. So in that respect, as far as celebrity life goes, no, it is not hard to me. I find it a great privilege when someone recognizes you or tells you thank you for what it is that you do. And I read my email and I'm very, very blessed. The only thing that is hard for Shonda Pierce, I think what's, ooh, and I'll choke up crying. The road life takes a toll for every artist. I don't care if you're a country artist or a Christian artist or anything. It takes a toll on your marriage. It takes a toll on your life with your kids. To do it and to do it well is very difficult. My husband and I chose to never pack up the kids and all go on the road together. And I look back at that because we wanted them to have a life. And I look back at that and I think that's one of my small regrets is that maybe we should have kept them closer. But you don't know. You know, we were young and stupid. And I can remember the first time I got to fly somewhere and speak. I thought this was amazing. My husband came and picked me up at the airport. And I said, I have $450 in cash in my purse. And he's like, I better take your purse to the car right now while we're waiting on the luggage. We were so, you know, we just were delighted with what the Lord was doing. But after 27 years, I can say that I had a manager one time tell me, you know, you need to get out there while you're hot because your kids will care more about the car you buy them than mama missing the soccer game. And I believed him. That was horrible. That was the Christian manager. So those things are, you know, those things, they don't slide away. You know, you have to work past that and not let that turn into shame. And I've had wonderful counselors help me with that. But yeah, the road life, that's the place that's hard to be Shonda Pierce. It's hard to night after night. I have tempered down my story a little bit. I went back to work about 2.5 years after David died. I realized that I was reliving that over and over every night because people wanted to know. They're curious what happened and how are you getting through widowhood and all of that. But after a while, it was taking a toll telling it night after night. And so I've had to learn what to share and what not to share. And that's been a really, that's hard for me because I share things. I just belched for you on national radio.
And so at 60 plus years old and you're touring and do you still get on a bus? Do you still do the things?
I still get on the bus. I still do my thing. It's, you know, it's about it used to be about a 3-hour night. Anybody that ever worked with me knows, you know, I'm a bit long winded. But the women love it, and I love talking to them. But I'm trying to be a little more disciplined in that area. So now it's a 2.5-hour night. I love it. I love what I do. I love, you know, Minnie Pearl said a long time ago, you got to love them and they'll love you back. It was speaking about authenticity and just really caring about your audience. And she was so right. She was just so right. For every talk show I didn't get to do or every movie I got passed over for, if you could take a day reading my email, it is the most blessed privilege to be an influence on anyone's life. I think it's sad when people are an influence and they don't realize they're being an influence and then they influence the wrong way. They take for granted. I had a sound man tell me something about some lady complained about this and that and the other. And he goes, who's my boss? And I said, the lady that complained about the loud sound. All these people sitting in this room paid your paycheck and mine. Don't ever forget that it's more about the audience than it is the big hot shot performance on the stage. You know, I don't know. That's probably why my career's in the toilet.
Shonda, this has been a pleasure. I'm a lover of comedy. What a thrill to talk to you.
Thanks, Corey. All right, bye, darling.
What else with Corey Mann from the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Hit the follow or subscribe button so you never miss an episode on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play. Feel free to leave some feedback, write a review, or tell a friend about What Else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network.